So, good morning, everyone. And welcome to people who are joining us this morning who weren't here for yesterday. So, as I think, as everyone knows, this is the second day of our yearly Dogen retreat. And we're kind of reading and discussing a fascicle or a chapter from his kind of collected works, that the Shobo Genzo. And this chapter is called Refrain from Unwholesome Action. And I won't cover all that we tried to talk about yesterday, but let me at least review the verse, because at the verse, or the gatha at the beginning, is what this whole fascicle is about. Dogen's asking us to explore this in more depth. Ancient Buddhas say, refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action, purify your own mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. And as we talked about yesterday, it seems on the surface pretty obvious. Pretty clear about what we should do. And yet, Dogen challenges us. Look deeper, he says. Question, inquire, investigate thoroughly. What lies beyond those words? And do we really understand those words? I think he's asking us to see clearly both what those phrases mean, wholeness and unwholesomeness, or good and evil, as is also translated in other translations, but also to see clearly the ground underneath, wholesome and unwholesome. So I'd like to start today, because we all have some other people joining us, I'd like to start with a poem that I think brings forward a lot of what we talked about yesterday. And this is a poem called Call Me by My True Names, written by Thich Nhat Hanh. Thich Nhat Hanh, as I think almost everyone probably knows, is a Buddhist monk in the Vietnamese Zen tradition. And during the Second Indochina War, known in which means the Vietnam War for most of us here. But in Vietnam, this war is known as the Resistance War Against America. That's what it's known as in Vietnam. Anyway, during that time, he worked tirelessly to support the wounded and dispossessed, no matter what side they were on. And he was highly criticized. Eventually, he had to leave. And his story unfolds, which I won't go into now. But one of the great teachers for our time. So, and I think most of you have at least heard his name, if not read a number of his books. He wrote a lot of books. So here's the poem. Don't say, I will depart tomorrow. Even today, I am still arriving. Look deeply. Every second I am arriving. To be a bud on a spring branch. To be a tiny bird with still fragile wings. Learning to sing in my new nest. To be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower. To be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive. In order to laugh and to cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I am the mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird that swoops down to swallow the mayfly. I am the frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond, and I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks, and I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the sea pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo, with plenty of power in my hands, and I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom all over the earth. My pain is like a river of tears, so vast it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and my laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. That's his poem. So let's consider, what are your true names? Do your names change with time? Do they differ from place to place? Morph into something distinct when the name is spoken by a different mouth? In this fascicle that we've been reading so far, Dogen focuses on the phrase, refrain from unwholesome action, and he asks us to investigate deeply. He guides us to see that good and evil, or wholesome and unwholesome, are not separate categories. That evil or unwholesomeness does not exist outside of us in some sense, but like all persons and indeed all things, it has no self-nature. Well, the study and practice of, you know, a good ethical conduct, moral behavior is encouraged in many of Dogen's other writings. In this one, he inquires us to investigate what is prior to good and evil. What comes before the unwholesome and the wholesome? And why is this important? Well, throughout the centuries, morality or ethics has played a key role in, I think, every society that I'm aware of. The first moral codes were given to us by the gods. The code of Hammurabi, one of the first codes that I'm aware of, is said to have come from the sun god, Shamash. And in the Hebrew Bible, we read the account of God giving, of course, the Ten Commandments and other moral restrictions. Ten Commandments to Moses on Mount Sinai, and then other moral commandments to other prophets. And here's one more example. In the writings of Plato, there's a mystical account, or perhaps it's simply a metaphorical account, of how Zeus gave humans a moral sense and the capacity for law and justice, so that humanity could live in communities, in harmony. Codes, commandments, precepts, These all offer guidance in how we can live together, how we should behave toward each other. All very powerful, very beautiful, very necessary. And they also limit and blind our behavior and attitudes when we hold them too rigidly. So often, moral behavior is applied to those familiar or close to us, those who are a part of our tribe. So that the stranger, that person we see as other, does not receive our ethical behavior, but in some stark or subtle ways stands outside our moral field. Maybe I should say a moral and ethical field. History shows us this again and again, and perhaps most vividly and terrifyingly in recent history would be the Holocaust. But there's so many other examples, right? We all know the stranger, the one who stands outside. That person is still with us today, as they have always been. We see this in the Sunni-Shia conflicts, the Rohingya genocide going on, the ongoing persecution by Myanmar government, or military perhaps I should say, racial discrimination so present in our lives today, sexual discrimination and violence, and so much more, right? It goes on and on. Our institutions and our social systems purposely or perhaps inadvertently create the outsider. And each of us does as well. A flash of anger or frustration, a moment of fear or distractedness, a time of obliviousness, or just bone weariness. At that moment, we can easily create the other, a stranger. Even those who we hold most dear, or maybe especially those we hold most dear, suddenly they are other. So, of course, we make great effort to study and practice the precepts, to live a moral life. But that is not enough. Dogen, in this fascicle, and throughout his writings, encourages us over and over again to honor the precepts, to study the precepts. And in this fascicle, he says, and go further. Rest your life. See your life in that great net of Indras that we talked about last time. The great net of wisdom and compassion that holds us so intimately together. He says, return and learn to abide in the great spaciousness, or that great interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh often writes about. Because in that web, in that place of interbeing, there is no stranger, no one and no thing standing outside. So as we studied yesterday in this piece of writing, Dogen uses refrain from over and over again as I think a kind of metaphor for dropping our habitual self-centeredness and awakening to our all-inclusive nature. So, keeping this in mind, let's continue to look at a few more passages. Now, I should say, and I meant to say last time, you know, we can't really explore all of these passages in this text. They're just not quite time in the weekend. But I'm going to be jumping around a little bit, especially today, just to make sure we get pick out what I think are real jewels for us to have by the end. So I'm going to start at, if you have that with you, 22, the paragraph 22. And this is also, I just should mention, on the website, under the events for this retreat, if you want to quickly call it up somehow, in another device, it's there.
As a PDF.
As a PDF. So, 22. Since this is so, regretting that you have created what should not be created is also inevitably the practice of refrain from. Nevertheless, intending to create unwholesome action, just because you hear that unwholesome action is refrained from, is just like walking north to try get to the southern country of Yue. Well, this is a rather a little bit twisty way, I think, of Dogen saying that the practice of refrain from, this returning, as I said, to our kind of ground of being, includes the practice of repentance. It includes saying, ah, I deeply regret what I did. I can see it was unwholesome action. Repentance, too, is a dharma gate to return. And, of course, resolving not to repeat it. So he's warning us, don't fall into sophistry. Don't think you can say to yourself, well, since everything is refraining from, it's all right if I commit some unwholesome actions and then maybe repent later, right? Don't do that. And then the next paragraph 23 is particularly interesting, I think, because it has a rather, let's go here. Let me read it first. Refrain from and unwholesome action are not only, in quotes now, the well seeing the donkey, unquote, but also the well seeing the well. In other words, inseparable from each other. The donkey seeing the donkey, the person seeing the person, the mountain seeing the mountain. Just as we speak in this way, unwholesome action is refrained from. So I find this one interesting because he's referencing a dialogue that comes from the Book of Serenity, which is a collection of dialogues from China. And this is a dialogue between a teacher named Cao Shan and Di, his student. And it goes like this. Cao Shan asked Elder Di, "The true Dharma body of Buddha is like the empty sky. It manifests its form corresponding to things, just like the moon on water. How do you explain the principle of this corresponding?" And D replies, "It's like the donkey looking into a well." And Cao Shan said back to him, "Ah, you put it in a nice way, but you were able to say only 80%. D said, "Ah, how about you, Master? How would you reply?" Cao Shan said, "It's like the well looking at a donkey." Pretty cute, eh? But for Dogen, neither answer was 100%. Maybe you say, "Oh, Cao Shan, pretty good. You've got 95%. But not quite 100% yet. Because Dogen adds his own. He says, it goes on to say, it's the donkey seeing the donkey, the well seeing the well, the mountain seeing the mountain. So he's like pushing it a little bit further. He's telling us that the all-inclusive nature of what we are, it's not there's two things. He says, come back to this all-inclusive nature. Mountain sees mountains. Well sees well. as well as the donkey sees the well. So he says, even see beyond things like unwholesome action is different from refrain from. See the unity there. Even they are not two distinct things. The person sees the person, the mountain sees the mountain. Can we see the entirety of the person or the mountain just as each is before any comparison or analysis pops up? I think it like this. This is kind of my little example. Kate and I, all our lives together, we have hiked and gone on camping trips. So here's my image. It's like after a long, weary slog up a trail, and you finally reach the summit and look over, and suddenly there's the great vista stretched out before you. That moment before even saying, ah, how beautiful, before anything. This is what Dogen is pointing us towards. An ancient Buddha, the ancient Buddhas say, refrain from unwholesome action. Do wholesome action, purify your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. At this point in the writing, Dogen now puts down unwholesome. He picks up wholesome action, or the good. He says in paragraph 25, this wholesome action is manifestation of one of the three natures. Although there are many varieties of wholesome action, there is no wholesome action that is already actualized and waiting for someone to practice it. At the very moment of doing wholesome action, there is no wholesome action that does not come forth. So, for those of you who were here yesterday, you can kind of see now Dogen's going to perhaps repeat, and he does, a lot of what he said about unwholesome action. So he begins by reaffirming the point that goodness is not something separate and waiting for us to bring it to life, to pick it up and somehow bring it to life. Goodness or wholesomeness is to be found only in the carrying out, the doing of what is good and what is wholesome. It's not extraneous or some kind of force. It only comes into being as we actualize it. At times, we fall into despair. We fall into despair, perhaps, over the situation of the world, or we're swept away in a tidal wave of tragic stories, stories of great suffering, selfishness, cruelty. And yet Dogen reminds us of the truth of how one good action, whether from body, speech, or mind, calls forth others. At the very moment of doing wholesome action, there is no unwholesome action that does not come forth. Our scope of seeing, you know, the good and goodness is so limited. And for some reason, I think even our physical nature, our the way we evolved, we tend to favor remembering, you know, and being cautious of those painful, tragic moments of our life. Well, perhaps for good reason, to prevent us from falling into them again. But Dogen says, That's not the way of things. Goodness, wholesomeness, so present. One good act brings forth myriad others. At least this is what he tells us. Let's see what more he says about this. So 26. Although myriads of wholesome actions are formless, they arrive at the place where wholesome action is done faster than a magnet drawing iron. Its power is stronger than a Barumbaka storm. The great earth, mountains, rivers, the lands of the world, or the increasing effect of action cannot hinder the intentional encounter of wholesome action. I think what Dogen is writing about here is our human responsibility and our human power. Good is something we enact. It depends on us. And when we do it, it contains myriads of wholesome actions. When we enact good, good attracts good faster than iron filings attracted to a magnet. He tells us, good is stronger than the winds that are said to blow at the very beginning and the very end of the world. That's what those winds are referring to. But those winds cannot disturb the good. Everyday people are doing good with body, speech, and mind. And that goodness is powerful and flows on unimpeded by any obstacle, by the mountains, rivers, lands of the world, etc. He uses this kind of metaphorical images. Nothing impedes good. In this world, good's effect is immense. And don't you find the truth of this really amazes us each time we are touched by a good action? Some kindness that touches us. The heart seems to open a bit more at that moment, doesn't it? The kind word, the kind gesture, the thought. In the relentless negativity that so often surrounds us, we forget the great power of kindness and the great power of wholesome actions. Let me just check the time here so I can... Okay, so 27. However, there is a principle that views, of wholesome action vary in the world. The views define what is wholesome action. It is just the same as all Buddhas in the past, present, and future expounding Dharma. Buddhas expounding Dharma while they are in the world is just time. They expound non-discriminating Dharma according to their lifespans and the dimensions of their bodies. So this is a little bit similar to the paragraph that we looked at yesterday around unwholesome action. So in this world, the understanding of wholesome action varies from time to time and place to place. It's not something fixed. And I think we can all appreciate this. But Dogen reminds us again of that returning to the foundation, the great unity. He says, all Buddhas of past, all Buddhas of the present, all Buddhas of the future expound the Dharma of non-discrimination. non-discriminating, this idea of the unity of things. And this is true with time. How we respond, of course, will be different according to the situation. The time will call us to respond in a certain way. How the goodness that manifests will have many forms. But if it comes from that place of wisdom and compassion, that all-inclusive place, it meets that moment, it meets that time fully, and is expressed in its great beauty. Begins with non-discrimination, expresses in the myriad forms that we see in the world. Awakened wisdom and compassion meets each time, meets each place. So I'm going to skip 28. I'm going to head off now to 29. In verse 29, he says, wholesome action does not arise due to causes and conditions, nor does it cease due to causes and conditions. Although wholesome action is all phenomena are not wholesome action. Causes and conditions, as well as wholesome actions, equally begin in completeness and end in completeness. So, I think in these two sentences, Dogen brings us back to the intimate, all-inclusive nature of reality. First, wholesome and unwholesome actions are in no way external to us. And while we may see causes and conditions that result in wholesome action, he says, look deeper. To see deeper is to understand the totality of the present moment, beyond causes and conditions. We may say that everything is the life of the universal self, carrying out good actions, wholesome actions, is not something that lies outside of us. It's just as it says in the Heart Sutra, right? No birth, no death, no beginning, no end. There is no beginning and no end of wholesome action. There's just the doing of it. I think that's what he's saying is begin in completeness and end in completeness. Begin in completeness and end in completeness. Even in time, he says, there's no distinction. Each moment is complete in itself. Our wholesome action, the doing of it, complete in itself. So he's really pushing us, pushing the envelope, so to speak. I think helping us to over and over again drop subject and object and just reside free of subject and object. Or maybe, as I said earlier, that universal self expressing itself. We get out of the way. So let's go on to 30. Although practicing wholesome action is due, and I think due means here, this another translation would be to carry out. To carry out something, so the verb to do, to carry out. Although wholesome action is due, it cannot be discerned. Although this due is a vital eye, it cannot be discerned. Due is not actualized for the sake of discernment. Discernment by the vital eye is not the same as discernment by something else. Awakened wisdom and compassion arise naturally. And we cannot see the measure of goodness with our eyes. We cannot see the measure of goodness by what people tell us. We cannot see its measure by reactions or the results that are immediately around us. It cannot be discerned, Dogen tells us. And really, you know, the Bodhisattva way is not to do good in order to get to see results or to get patted on the head. Good boy, good girl, good person. Right? Yeah. And we take up those incredible vows, right? Beings are endless, I vow to save them. We will never know the results of good actions that we do. We may have some inclination. We may hear a few good words back, and that's also very heartwarming to have. But Dogen is telling us there is an inexhaustible power of good. What is it to know? What is it that knows? What is it that sees the inexhaustible power of good? This is what he's talking about, the vital eye. There's something that goes beyond our everyday discriminating thinking. Can we trust or have faith that just to carry on bringing goodness into life, not knowing the results that will echo throughout time and space? A kind word, a hug. Wouldn't it be nice to hug people again? Some quiet listening, a few coins to a street person saying thank you. Thank you. I think these are all places we begin. We seed goodness in the world in this way. And allow it to grow. I think this is the power we have, Dogen tells us. We have the power, our human power, is to bring into this world goodness, wholesome action. Allow it to grow. Let's skip down to 34, and then we'll pause. Both cause and effect of wholesome action actualizes the fundamental point through carrying out or do. Cause is not before and effect is not after. Cause is complete and effect is complete. Cause is all-inclusive just as Dharma is all-inclusive. Effect is all-inclusive just as Dharma is all-inclusive. Although effect is experienced, induced by a cause, one is not before and the other is not after. We say that before, both before and after, are all-inclusive. Well, it kind of echoes what things we've looked at earlier. But I want to say that Dogen discusses the importance of being a really a good moral person, one who contributes to the community, observes the propriety of the group in many of his places of writing. Dogen encourages his followers to be modest, gentle, magnanimous. But here in this last paragraph that we just looked at, he's pointing to what is beneath or supporting all our understanding of good. All our understanding, also, of course, earlier of unwholesome. There are times when our understanding of moral behavior and ethics gets in the way of both the openness needed for great kindness and the non-discriminating wisdom or prajna needed to express this kindness. Dogen is encouraging us again and again to return to the all-inclusive. Okay, well, we'll have questions in a moment, but what I would like to ask you now is I'd like you to consider, in your view, just as we did yesterday, what is goodness? What is wholesome action? So a list of things or and whatever comes to you, and then how do you know? Is there a way to know or to check what is good? So you can take just a moment or two, write down a few things, and then I'll ask you to kind of, we'll get into groups to share that. And the other thing I'm going to ask you to talk about, if this doesn't appeal to you, or just a few things, is how do you respond to Thich Nhat Hanh's poem that I read earlier? How do you respond to that poem that I read earlier? So those two things, I'll give you just maybe another minute and a half or so to jot down some quick ideas in point form, and then we'll put you into groups.